Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Glory Glory Man United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kyle Quinn. And joining me today is my regular co-host, Brushy. How's it going, Brush?
Yeah, not too bad, Carl. Not too bad. How about yourself?
Not too bad, really. Manchester United certainly giving us a scare this afternoon by going 2-0 up against Newport County of League Two. Who are about 73 places below Manchester United, and then chucking it away at 2-2. I thought Newport were really coming on strong, and I thought we were going to crumble again. But we ended up winning the game 4-2. But I have to say, I'm not very impressed overall, to be honest, with Manchester United's performance in that game. Would you go along with that, Brush?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was quite reminiscent of the Copenhagen game, you know, at 2-0 up. In the opening minutes, we looked fully in control. And then somehow we found ourselves level at 2-2. It was crazy. I thought it was going to be another one of them days.
Yeah, if we were playing a Premier League team today, we would say that's a great result and a good performance. You know, coming back from losing a two-goal lead and winning the game 4-2. But when you're playing a team, you know, so far off Premier League level, it's embarrassing, really. Yeah, just look at the goals that Man United give away there in that game. Okay, the first one was a long-range effort that was deflected and took it away from the goalkeeper. The second goal that they scored, Dalot was so far out of position, it's unbelievable. Cross comes in and Varane just gets beaten to the ball. He just casually tried to clear it, and then the striker got in front of him and put it away. Far too casual, in my opinion. And then United were then on the ropes at that point. I think even their manager said he thought that he had us at that point. He could see us crumbling under the pressure. But yeah, it's just not good enough, is it? And this was Manchester United's strongest 11, more or less. You could argue that Onana gets in, not for me, and Rashford maybe part of the strongest 11. But I'm sure the manager wouldn't mind having Anthony ahead of Rashford. So you could put an argument that's Ten Hag's best team, and they struggled against Newport County. It's just humiliating, isn't it, Brush?
Yeah, honestly, any 11 we put out today should have been able to beat them comfortably. No disrespect to them, but, you know, like you mentioned, the gulf in class, at least on paper, you know, from League Two to Premier League. We should have made light work of a game like that, and we didn't. Looked totally out of ideas. The wingers were atrocious, I thought.
Yeah, and I have to ask, why do we play inverted wingers and a centre forward? It probably makes more sense to play a false nine if you're playing inverted wingers.
Absolutely. Højlund looked absolutely lost. I was somewhat relieved when he got the goal. But I mean, yeah, there was no service, and he largely just was missing for the game.
Yeah. To me, we do not play to his strengths. It's not set up to help him succeed. And you could see today that he was openly furious with the wingers on the lack of service. You know, even he kicked the post in frustration at one point. I also seen it being highlighted in social media, him having a go at Garnacho on a separate occasion. And like I said, what is the point in playing an out-and-out number nine if you've got inverted wingers? I don't understand that from Ten Hag, do you?
Not really, no. No. there was that one chance where Garnacho, I mean, if you're going to be selfish and take the shot on, you need to hit the target. He was somewhat unfortunate because it bounced off the top of the bar. But you've got two people to pick out, and, you know, that's job done. It's 3-0 at that stage. Just make the simple pass. Both Højlund and Bruno are in much better positions for the tap-in.
Yeah, simple square ball on Bruno or Højlund would have topped it in. He went for the spectacular. Interesting comments from Bruno after the game. He appeared to hint at that. He said, "We had chances to make it 3-0, but everyone wanted to score and get their goal and everything. And sometimes we don't do what's the best decision for the team." You could say that about United every single week.
It's kind of rich coming from him.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, yes. Yeah, that's a good point.
Because he's usually the culprit. But yeah, I think what it is as well, I think obviously you know, with being young and naive, and you know, when you're 2-0 up against the opposition that are three divisions below you, you probably do think, you know, you're 2-0 up, you're comfortable, now I can just go out and express myself, you know. So there's probably a bit of that. Yeah.
But it's not just today where you've seen our so-called wingers have an opportunity to cross and they don't take on the shot. And Højlund today, it just seemed to boil over. I've never seen him so angry.
I can't blame him. I can't blame him. I mean, it was one of those days where I understand both things. I understand that he wasn't getting service. I was also frustrated at him because when I look at the golf in divisions, this is the kind of game where I expect Rasmus to make things happen, you know. And largely, he was missing. And even the goal is somewhat fortunate, to be fair.
And no surprise, the goal didn't come from an assist. From a rebound. The substitute, Forzan, had an effort saved by the goalkeeper, and Rasmus tucked away the rebound. And it was a striker's goal, which I'm pleased about. I want to see Rasmus get as many goals as possible. I think that takes him on to 8 for the season now. And like you say, you know, you want Rasmus to be getting on the score sheet against this type of opposition. And he did after 90 plus 4 minutes. Now, I want to come on to Anthony's performance, which might divide opinion. In my opinion, he didn't play well at all. I felt in the first half, a lot of our big chances were falling to him, to my frustration. But he did get a goal and an assist on the day. So some people will classify that as a good performance. But and there's a lot of that in the modern game where when fans analyze games or even pundits, when somebody gets a goal and assist, that's classified as, oh, that's a wonderful 8 out of 10. But watching the game, and I felt as if Anthony was quite poor and was lucky not to be substituted. How did you see it, Brush?
Yeah, so did I, to be fair. Obviously, we live in a stats-based era, right? So the only thing anyone's going to highlight mainly is the fact that he got a goal and assist. And they'll also point to the fact that, you know, he's been so devout of goals and assists that they're going to hype this up. But yeah, like you say, overall performance-wise, I wasn't happy. I was sat there wondering what Ahmad has to do to get a run in. I actually thought today probably would have been the perfect opportunity to give him a run out. But, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, like you said as well, it was pretty much our first 11.
Yeah, and neither Dallow or Plaistrey came off the bench, to my surprise. Scott McTominay came off the bench again, and he nearly chopped someone in half. I just don't see the point of Scott McTominay. You know, do you see when you see him coming on as our first substitution? It's a head and hands moment.
For me, it's just a reminder that it just tells me that we're going route one. Like, you know, the ball over the top, try get him into the box, maybe. I don't understand.
Yeah, he's just not a very good midfielder at this level. And even though we weren't even playing the team at our level, I still don't want to see him come on. Yeah, it was more like, for me, that's basically the strongest 11, because I think on today's evidence, I know it's early days and we're only playing Newport County, but Bayinda looked more confident than Onana.
I can't say that just yet, Carl, just because of the opposition. I don't think Bayinda was tested nearly as enough as he should have been. So I'll wait. I'll hold out until we see him against Premier League opposition.
What I will say is that Onana and Rashford, neither of those have been good enough all season. So you can argue that this is our strongest 11. And we really struggled against a League 2 side and a team that's not even anywhere near the top of League 2. It's deeply worrying. And I tell you what, we've got Wolves away on Thursday night.
It's going to be a difficult one, that.
I got to say I'm fearful, because Wolves are in great, great form at the moment.
And you remember what they did to us on opening day. We were lucky to come away with the points.
So fortunate to come away with the points there.
Was it Cunha was running right through our midfield?
Yeah, and he started to score goals now, Cunha.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
Pedro Neto scored today as well against West Brom. Obviously, the South Korean fella scored a lot of goals for Wolves this season.
Hwan Hee Chan.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, doing really well under Gary O'Neill. And
yeah,
whenever we play a decent team away from home under Ten Hag, we don't tend to come away with the 3 points, do we, Brush?
No. And obviously, that's one of the reasons why today is quite disappointing. Obviously, we got the win. You know what? Most people wouldn't even realize we got the win the way we're talking. But you know, when you just see things in the team and you're just like, oh, you know, even in this month where we've not really had many games and you've had time to prepare, and this is the best you can show. Like, it is quite concerning. I've always been, you know, one to call for patience. But if some sections are calling now and questioning what the manager's doing, like, really, what can I say? Can't really defend this.
Yeah, I think some fans' patience is running out. I'll come to a comment here from one of my followers on Twitter, and he says, that's the game that's made my mind up. He's not the man, and nor will he ever be. He's referring to Ten Hag there.
Yeah.
So I think I've said this already on the show, that with every passing week, more and more Ten Hag loyalists, if you like, are changing to the other side, coming to my side, and being very, very doubtful of this manager. You know, for me, I see United team that don't even do the basics well. You know, I don't see the tactical setup is questionable. The defending from set pieces, the attacking set pieces are absolutely woeful. So, and obviously, the Anthony and Onana and the likes of those players that we don't rate, I certainly don't, are going to be, you know, part of the first 11 as long as Ten Hag's here. And I don't see how we can succeed with those players. Nigel, who contributes to this show, said that Anthony now is going to play the next 10 games in a row after he scored that goal.
And did you see the celebration too? You would think he just scored an absolute worldie against one of the best teams around.
Yeah, you think he scored against Barcelona in the new camp?
Yeah, the way he dropped to his knees.
But that's his first goal and assist of the season.
Yeah,
that's why he's celebrating. So it's taken to January 28th for him to register a goal or an assist, and it's against Newport County, and he's celebrating like he's won the World Cup. It's dire straits for Manchester United at the moment, I have to say. I imagine Anthony might get a few games. Daphne's going to start against Wolves now, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Because Ten Hag will view that as a top performance from Anthony. I'm not confident ahead of that Wolves game. But just if I can briefly come on to a few positives, which is obviously the goals. Bruno Fernandes, well taken goal cut back from Anthony. And the first thing that I thought of when I seen that goal was Anthony was on the left. And I've been calling for this. I don't want Anthony to be part of our 11. I've been a huge critic of his. But if he is going to start, in my opinion, he should play on the left. What's your thoughts, Brush?
It's very interesting, isn't it? Because Garnacho, when he played on the right, looked quite good there as well, to my surprise. So I would like to see a bit of interchange there. Keep the opponents guessing, you know? There was one or two times today, though, where they were both on the left. Where Garnacho was there and Anthony had moved over to the left as well. And I was like, what's going on here? So they were trying to do little one-twos, but they were both on the left. So, I don't know. I don't know if that was, manager's instructions or if one of them just lacks total discipline.
Anthony was just wandering because of the opposition. He was just kind of doing what he likes. I don't like the inverted wingers. Like I've said earlier, it doesn't provide Højlund with any service because they both want to cut
like him. You say, I think there is a place for inverted wingers, but if you're going to do that, you probably need a false nine, not a target man.
And we have a target man. I feel as if you should play Garnacho on the right, he's excelled there, and play Anthony on the left if he has to start him. And give that a go for a bit.
Yes, and start like giving minutes to Ahmad to see what he can offer.
Absolutely, because I felt Ahmad was very good when he came on against Forest, and we haven't seen him since.
Yeah, this is the thing. It can't be so stop and start, you know? Like, even if it's off the bench, it needs to be regular minutes off the bench until he builds up match sharpness.
Yeah, and that was a month ago.
Yeah, yeah. I reckon at least one of him and Pellestri are leaving this Jan. Probably Pellestri. They'll probably go out on loan.
Yeah, my feeling is that even just looking at the Forest game, take that in isolation, Ahmad and Pellestri are both available, and it was Ahmad who came off the bench. And yeah. Pellestri, as we know, has only started four times for Manchester United.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Ten Hag is only keeping Pellestri as a body. I don't think he really has him in his plans. So no. I don't think Pellestri will be at the club any further than this summer. And with Ahmad being available now, there is a possibility that he could go out on loan yet again. So I don't think Pellestri, you know what, I think he's a good footballer and I think he'll have a decent career, but I just don't think it's going to happen for him at Manchester United. What do you think, Brush?
Same. I think the same thing. I think he might be one of those that goes over to like La Liga or somewhere mid-table and establishes a decent career for himself.
Yeah, I think so too. So the second Manchester United goal, Dalot was running at their left back like he was a world-class winger doing all these stepovers. And then he pulled it back for Manu, who scored his first goal for Manchester United. It was a terrific finish, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Take that first time as well. Cool, calm and composed. And yeah, when I was watching Dalot do that, I was like, oh, if only you could do this against Premier League opposition.
Yeah, he thought he was Kefi in that moment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in comparison, he probably was, to be fair.
Yeah. Yesterday, I was thinking these Newport fullbacks are making Dalot look
really good. But, with just the fitness levels and stuff as well of the Premier League players, I mean, he wouldn't get the time on the ball that he did to do all of that.
Yeah, absolutely not. So Anthony got the third goal. That was all Luke Shaw for me.
Yeah.
Turned back onto his right foot, curled the shot against the post, and then Anthony tucked it away with his right foot, it has to be said. Good first-time finish from the rebound, but I think it was Shaw who done all the work there.
Definitely. But I'll give credit where credit's due. A good reaction from Anthony. To be alert to it and to actually hit it on target.
Yeah, if I'm being honest, I would have expected Anthony to miss the target there.
Yeah.
But on that occasion, he didn't. But there were occasions where he was really frustrating me, where he had an opportunity inside the box in the first half as he put over the bar.
Yep.
He was curling shots wide of the post again. And I think he had a shot blocked in the six-yard area.
I think the commentator mentioned it as well at one stage when he cut inside. Like everyone knows what he's going to do. And I was just there like, yeah, everyone knows. And it doesn't even hit the target anymore.
The fact that commentators are even saying that, it's embarrassing, really.
The fact that they mentioned, oh yeah, he's cutting inside as we know he would, or something to that effect.
Yeah, he's so predictable.
Listen, if you're going to be a one-trick pony, if you're going to do that, that's fine, but perfect it. But if you're not even hitting the target, then what is the point? And I'll tell you what, this week, Carl, I saw on the timeline, Ian Robben turned 40. So to celebrate his birthday, there was loads of compilations and stuff. And, it's night and day, isn't it? Oh, when you see what that guy could do just with that same move.
Anthony's just not in the same league.
He's not, I don't even think they played the same sport, to be fair. And you know what? And it said that he just finished some sort of half marathon or something, and he did it in like an hour. I'll take 40-year-old Robben.
Get him on loan for 6 months. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He did like a 15K in like an hour or something. I was like, wow, okay.
I think we nearly had him. Only Peter Kenyon moved to Chelsea.
We messed up there because I believe we had a deal agreed as well, and then we found out as well that PSV were in financial trouble, and we withdrew the initial bid and tried to offer less money. And by then it was too late with Peter Kenyon at Chelsea, and they swooped.
That sounds like Glazernomics, but the Glazers weren't even there at that point.
Yeah.
I think even the commentator was even emboldened to say that, does this guy never do any work on his right foot in training? It just seems to be a standing leg.
Yeah, I think what the real shame about the Robben one was that there was several chances to get him, especially when he left Real Madrid.
Yeah, we should have got Robin and Snyder in the Ronaldo deal, I
Yes,
felt.
yes. Yeah, because obviously Real Madrid were rebuilding as well, and they let go of both Robben and Schneider.
Remember we were linked with Frank Ribery when Ronaldo left as well, if only
Yeah,
for.
oh, what a player he was. What?
And we got Antonio Valencia. Not that he was a bad player, but he wasn't quite on that level. I mean,
Terrible, terrible in comparison.
yeah.
He had one move. He was so incredibly frustrating. I'll tell you what. The only time I liked Valencia was when he turned to a fullback. I could not stand him as a winger.
Yeah, I think he had one really good season as a right
Yeah.
winger. It was the season of the Aguero moment.
Oh, jeez.
That Valencia was so good that season as a winger that when we played City towards the end of the campaign, I think where Company scored in a from a corner in a one nil win. Whenever it was the United team sheet came out and Valencia wasn't starting that game, to everybody's surprise, a big roar went up in the City dressing room. That's how well he was playing. And then he obviously went back to be he was a right back then and in the later part of his United career. But yeah, he was kind of the opposite of Anthony in many ways, that the only thing he could do was go down the line and cross the ball, and he was.
Yeah, we've got one that can cut inside all the time, and the other one just used to go outside and just had one cross on him. And what used to irritate the hell out of me was it didn't matter if he was being marked out by the left back, he would just follow through with the same shot. So a lot of the time it was as if he was playing for throw-ins and corners.
Yeah, oh, a lot of his crosses would just, you just drill them and they'd hit the fullback shins and out for a corner. And it'd become really, really annoying watching that week in, week out. But, Rooney really liked playing with him. I think I get the sense from Rooney's interviews that he liked playing with Valencia more than Nani. I suppose you get more service from
It's
Valencia than Nani.
because one's very unpredictable, isn't he? And on his day, Nani, what a player. Incredible talent, but it's just it was few and far between. Whereas I suppose if you're playing with someone like Valencia, you know exactly what he's going to do. So if you're a teammate, you could probably anticipate and get yourself into positions knowing exactly what's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. So back to today, the fourth goal, yeah, it was Forzan who had the initial effort, and then Højlund bundling in the rebound. And it was a real striker's goal. I'm happy to see him get another goal, and hopefully he'll get into double figures very soon. And he can finish the season strongly, even if the team doesn't. It'd be good for his confidence, to get as many goals as possible. I think he's but so five in the Champions League, two in the Premier League, and now one in the FA Cup. I want to see him try and get to 15 if he can in all comps. It's possible now because he only had to score seven more to even meet that target. A month ago we probably thought that was impossible. But it's happening for him, despite the fact that these inverted wingers should provide him with no service at all. Imagine how many goals he would get if he was playing for Manchester City or Liverpool. Another positive today was the return of Martinez. Did you see his wee pirouette and then the crossfield ball in the first half? That's what we've missed, isn't it?
Definitely, definitely. But it's early days. Glad to see him back. But I just can't wait till he starts gelling again and re-establishing that partnership. Also, based on Ten Hag's decisions, I do wonder if for the second half of the season, the first choice is still going to be Martinez next to Rafa.
Interesting that he did go for Rafa today, alongside Martinez, even though he has Maguire and Evans available. We'll see how that pans out. At some point, Varane's going to get injured, isn't he? Let's be honest about it.
Unfortunately.
Casemiro made his return today. I have to say it. Now we have to give him the benefit of the doubt because it's his first game since November the 1st or something, and he obviously will be lacking much fitness. But he was not very good today, was he?
No, no. Mena is the better of the two today.
He's beginning to look like an old man, isn't he, Casemiro? Even the booking that he got was another needless lunge. I know it might have stopped a counter attack for Newport, but how many times have we seen him just lunge in like that when he's no chance of winning the ball? Just
And I think
to
we spoke about it before, Kyle. Honestly, I think in the summer, I think Saudi beckons.
Absolutely. I think both Cass and Varane will go to Saudi. And yeah, it also seemed as if Aaron Wan-Bissaka was the odd man out today. He travelled, but he didn't make it on the bench. We all know that Ten Hag prefers Dalot. Wan-Bissaka has been linked with El Nasser as well, Ronaldo's club. That'll be an interesting one. So we could get.
Yeah, I saw those leaks. I didn't really know what to make of that one, to be fair.
We could end up getting a fee from El Nasser for Wan-Bissaka as well at some point. I couldn't see them letting him go this month because we've let go of so many players. That,
yeah, we just don't have enough cover.
Yeah, we don't want to leave ourselves short.
Yeah. I already think we're a little bit short in letting go of Reguilon. Without Malacia coming back.
Yeah. And I have to say, I know this is going to sound harsh, but I don't rate Malacia either.
Yeah, no.
I think once we lose Luke Shaw, it's a major drop-off in that position.
Yes, most definitely. And obviously, because Malacia's been out, we can't really judge. But yeah, I don't want to be too harsh, but yeah, I'm getting Alex Butner vibes, you know?
Yeah, another average Dutch league. Dan here says that is the only issue with our striker. He does not get the service. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yes, he has missed chances, but every striker misses chances. He's just not getting enough ball. And today he really showed his frustration with that.
I think stats showed as well, Carl, like the amount of shots he's had in the season throughout up to now, and it's a lot lower than where it should be. But again, it's because we don't create enough chances as a team.
Yeah, I think I've seen a stat that out of all the starting number nines in the Premier League, he gets the least passes or something like that.
Yeah,
doesn't surprise me. That's what we've been watching all season, really.
Yeah, no, because I was reading it was something like 20. It was like, 20-something is shots. So I was like, wow. You know, for a striker, especially at our club, I would expect it to be about 60, 70-ish. But that means you have to create at least like four chances for him. Like, you know, you need to be having four plus chances a game. And he just doesn't get that.
Definitely not. Even Van Nistelrooy was struggling to score goals in this team. I have to ask you about the debut of Bayinda then. What did you make of it?
I can't really say too much on it, to be honest. It's not a fair gauge to judge him on that level of opposition. Like you said, I don't think the first goal was his fault. Obviously, took that deflection, which was unfortunate. He was never really tested, for my liking.
Yeah, he probably wasn't. I think he had a save at the end of the game, which he should be making. Other than that, it was straightforward for him. His passing looked good from what I could see, especially in the first half. Although there was one time where his pass wasn't great and Martinez soon let him know about it. that's where it comes in to what we've talked about, where Martinez should be the captain. Because he just, everything about him says captain. And hopefully we'll see that sometime in the future. I think it was a mistake to make Bruno captain. Don't want to be too harsh on Bruno. I think he played well today, even though the opposition wasn't great. But I just think we should let Bruno get on with being the attacking midfielder and forget about being the captain of the football club. I always prefer defenders to be captains anyway, or a midfielder, not the second striker, which Bruno is. And I just don't think he's captain material. He's too whiny. He doesn't lead by example. I don't feel. And just like Maguire, it seems like it's been a burden on him. There's been a bit of a drop off in his performances this season, as there was with Maguire when he was captain. And second thoughts, maybe not give it to Martinez. It may be a curse.
In case it weighs him down.
I suppose it's hard for anyone to look good as captain when you consider who's been captain of Manchester United in the past. You know, it's
absolutely.
Yeah, like Roy Keane and Brian Robson and Eric Cantona and all those guys. You know, it's just
hard footsteps to follow.
It's a lot to live up to, really.
Yeah.
So let's do some player ratings. Bayinda, I'm going to say six. I'm not going to give too many high ones here, considering the opposition and all that. Dalot, very, very poor for the equalizing goal. Well out of position there, which is not unusual for Dalot. So I'm going to say five.
Does he redeem himself, though, for the assist?
He should be getting an assist against opposition like that. Yeah, it was made too easy for him. But yeah, he done what he had to do. But yeah, still only a five for me. You know, when you can see a goal like that against that type of opposition, then you have to be critical of the defenders. Definitely. Likewise for Varane, he should have done better when the ball came.
Yeah, he was very lackadaisical. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if some of these players find it harder to get motivated against opposition from lower divisions, you know? I think there was a little bit of naivety there.
I thought Varane was too passive in the Richarlison goal against us a couple of weeks ago as well.
Yes, yeah, the header, from the corner, I don't think he picked up his man well at all. He should.
Even though he didn't seem to be marking Richarlison, A centre half of his height should be taking charge of the situation, but he didn't. So Varane gets marked down to a five today. Martinez, I'll give him a 6.5 on his return. Obviously, he's going to have to work on his match fitness, and that will take a few games. But some lovely play today. You know him. He allows us to get the back four further up the pitch, and his distribution is magnificent. So he's actually really crucial to us going forward as well as defending. So great to see him back. So 6.5. Luke Shaw, likewise, 6.5. Played well today, played a crucial role in the third goal. But these players should be playing well against Newport County. Manu got his first goal for Manchester United. I'll give him a 7 for his performance. Casemiro looked off the pace again. I don't know what has to do with the fact that he's old now or he lacks match fitness. We'll find out in the coming weeks, but I fear that's not going to be the answer that we want it to be if you look at his performances earlier in the season. They were quite similar. So Casemiro a 5. Bruno Fernandes, really good today, I felt. Well taken goal. We've seen Bruno score many of those goals. I give him a 6.5.
Nearly not enough in recent times.
No. Like I said earlier, it's been a drop off since he's become captain. Not doing it enough. Anthony, it's a difficult one, you know. I thought he was quite poor. Looking at to be substituted. But he did contribute to us winning the game.
Yeah.
But he did miss a couple of easy chances as well. I'm going to say 5.5. Alejandro Garnacho, what did you make of his performance today? How would you critique it, Bruce?
I don't think he was great today, to be honest. He was trying hard. But decision-making in key times, it's just not there for me. But again, I wonder if it's because of the opposition as well. I feel as if some of our players probably thought, and rightly so, that they are better. But then you have to apply yourself. You know, you can't just rest on the fact that you're better and start doing silly things. So I wasn't impressed with him today.
Yeah, and went for glory and hit the bar when he should have scored it. Two men in the middle. This decision making was off today, but where he's been playing well recently is on the right, and once again he was taken out of that position.
On the left. Yeah,
the reason for that, we'll get onto it later in the show. So Garnacho, I'm going to say 5, and Rasmus Højlund, frustrating afternoon for him. Very little service. I think the commentator mentioned halfway through the second half that he hadn't even had an effort on goal at that stage.
Yeah.
And he hit his number 9 against Newport.
Because honestly, I was quite annoyed. He was invisible. He was invisible for that game until the goal happened.
So we'll say 6 because he got his goal. And the substitutes were on very, very late, so it's hard to really mark them. And Ten Hag, you could say, got out of jail today. considering how Newport got back in the game there against United. Yeah. And we're on top when it was 2-2 for a while. So Ten Hag,
and that's quite damning, isn't it? The fact that we're sat here saying, yeah, Ten Hag, he got out of jail today. It's Newport. What are we doing?
73 places below United in the football.
Yeah, tournament. And we're talking about four. We got away with one. It's not good enough, is it?
Yeah. So I'm gonna say five for Ten Hag, and lucky to get it, and that's only because he won the game. And should have given Diallo an opportunity in this match, because he is an exciting talent, and I don't want to see him being sold without being given a proper chance, because that's happened to a few players. Yeah. I do think that he's really got something about him. He's capable of scoring quality goals like we saw last season at Sunderland. And looked a threat when he came on against Forest, as I say. So I want to see him get his chance. But will he, now that Anthony got a goal and assist against Newport, so he'll probably start against Wolves. So unless he's not going to play him as a number 10, because that's Bruno's position. He's going to have to be patient, it seems. And we're not going to have an awful lot of midweek matches now with us being out of Europe and all that. So yeah, he'll have to wait for maybe an injury or suspension to get into the team. So I want to come on to part two of the show, and that's about Marcus Rashford this week, who's been in the headlines. He was filmed at a nightclub in Belfast, and he told the club that it was on Wednesday night. Now, he didn't report to training on Friday morning, saying that he was ill, and everyone assumed that he's been out on the Thursday night. But he had informed the club that he was out on Wednesday. But since then, it has transpired, after some investigative journalism from The Athletic, that he was in fact at a nightclub in Belfast on Wednesday night and Thursday night, and phoned in sick to training on Friday morning. That is absolutely unacceptable, Brush. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, disgraceful behaviour, especially from one of our senior players, especially with, being the face of the franchise, if you like. The wages he's on, you should be leading by example. Absolute nonsense. I'm not even fussed that he missed the game against Newport, because any 11 we put out should have been capable of beating them. And he's not been in great form this season anyway, so that I'm not too fussed about. But just in terms of professionalism, it's totally unacceptable.
Yeah, and there's a pattern this season of Rashford going out at inappropriate times. Mm-hmm. You remember after the smashing at home to Manchester City, he went to a China White nightclub in Manchester that night.
Yeah.
Wasn't a great look. But this is even worse. You're missing training because you're out clubbing.
Yeah. No, this is definitely worse. Because with the other one, you're entitled to have a private life, right? So, if you're out and about, I don't really mind usually. But stuff like this, though, when you're lying and you're out when you're not supposed to be, and you're missing training and it affects the club directly, then I've got an issue.
And do you know what? See if he was playing well, nobody would even bat an eyelid.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's been so poor this season.
And the audacity as well, Carl, because obviously he knows himself how profile he is, how high profile he is. And, he's been in the limelight for long enough now to know what comes with it. He must have known that if he's out and about, he's going to get filmed. Stories are going to get leaked. So why do it?
Yeah. And imagine being naive enough to lie to the club about which night he was out.
Exactly. Especially in this social media era we live in, where everything's recorded. It's ridiculous, isn't it, really?
Yeah, so he got 30 goals last season. Then he got a bumper five-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, he scored 4 goals in 6 months. He's been allergic to tracking back. Fans have cheered him being substituted this season. And now he's going out clubbing and missing training, and now has effectively been dropped from the squad by Ten Hag. Ten Hag has obviously been asked about it before the game. And he said that it's an internal issue and he will deal with it. at the very least, he has to be docked 2 weeks' wages and also be dropped from the Wolves fixture as well. And then we'll see what happens after that. But yeah, if we're going to apply discipline to other players, then it has to apply to the top players in the squad as well. You can't just, you know, suspend, you know, the squad players for doing things that are unacceptable and then let, you know, the top players get away with it. Now, to be fair to Nag, he hasn't, you know, he's been forthright in his punishments to the likes of Ronaldo, Garnacho, and even Rashford last season. And he was left on the bench against Wolves for missing a team meeting. So I expect that he's going to come down hard on him again. But this is the last thing that the manager needed. There's been so many issues this season with Sancho and now Rashford's ill discipline. And there is a theory among supporters that Rashford has tossed it off this season because he's mates with Sancho. What do you think, Brush?
I don't know about all of that, but we've seen this pattern in his gameplay where he has one good season followed by one bad season.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, it just all coincided together at the wrong time, really. Like, obviously, last year, yeah, it was a wonderful season that he had, but his contract was also running out. Again, this goes back down to the club and their poor planning. So, you know, we were in a situation where you, on the back of last season, you couldn't not offer him a new contract. And obviously, he holds all the power after a 30-goal season. So we've given him a bumper contract and now we're tied down and stuck to it.
And he's behaving like he holds all the power now.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, because even if you wanted to get rid, like, who could possibly afford him? Like, there's only a couple of clubs in the world. And then on current form, none of them would want to pay for him anyway. So, you know, he's probably very secure in his position, knowing that he can get away with a lot.
Somebody on social media has suggested this, and it's very, very ambitious, that Mbappe goes to Real Madrid, Vinicius Jr. goes to Manchester United, and Rashford goes to PSG.
And on FIFA career mode, I'm sure that'll play out fantastically well. Yeah, I don't see a scenario in which Madrid would want to part with Vinny, nor that he would want to come to us. But one can dream, eh?
There had been some media stories that Florentino Perez isn't completely happy with Vinicius and would happily swap him for Mbappe. But even if that was the case, I couldn't imagine that. Now, United are probably going to be in the Europa League at best next season. I couldn't imagine that Vinicius would want to join Manchester United.
I mean, yeah, one step at a time. We don't even know. Yeah, there's so much up in the air. Like, we've mentioned it a couple of times already this month. We don't know who the manager's going to be in the summer. Like, you know, we don't.
And as with every passing week, that becomes more uncertain.
Yeah.
But if that three-way transfer happened, I think I would accept it 100%.
Oh, hell yeah. I don't think anybody would complain. It's just very unrealistic. I mean, yeah. I'm pretty sure me and you would offer to drive him there ourselves.
Yeah. But tell you what,
pick up Vinny on the return.
Even if we don't get Vinny,
yeah,
I'd be quite happy to sell Rashford to PSG. I've been saying this for months, but now more than ever.
But this is the thing, though, you know, after this stinker of a season, like, would they even want to pay for Rashford?
Well, if Mbappe goes to Madrid, I mean, there's nobody of that quality that they can replace him with. So they're going to have to step down in quality to get the replacement for Mbappe. And they have had a long-standing interest in Marcus Rashford. And they might, you know, he can still dine out on that 30-goal season, I feel. It was only a year ago, so Rashford and his brother can easily put it down to Ten Hag or the team not playing well or whatever. You know, they can blame somebody else. So they might not want to pay 100 million for him, but yeah. I still think that United could get a good fee for Rashford in the summer. Mm. But it's whether or not the club will be willing, this will be totally down to Ineos now, but whether or not the club will be willing to part ways with an academy prospect, an academy graduate who's recently scored 30 goals for United, and obviously...
Exactly. They'll probably think they can fix him before they attempt to sell him.
Yeah, and obviously people still love him for what he did during mm-hmm. the pandemic. But that was fantastic, but 4 years ago. But now, at 26 years old, he's starting to behave like a teenage footballer. I just don't understand what he's doing. What are you doing, man? Why are you behaving like this? You know, you don't always get what you want in football. Might not be happy with the manager. Might not be happy with the way things have turned out for Sancho. But you're being paid to entertain the fans. Just get on with it. I don't know why he's gone off the rails in the way that he has. It's very, very, you know, disappointing. And like you say, he's very inconsistent anyway. I mean, mm-hmm. he got 30 goals last season, but he got 5 the season before.
Yeah, the season before he was so bad. You know, I always talk about that one game against Atletico Madrid, you know, the one where he's walking back to the coach and the fans were yelling at him and he turned around and yeah, it's horrible scenes. In that match, like, he didn't even look like a footballer in that match, to be honest.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, he wasn't very happy with being criticised by the fans, by the way, have every right to criticise him. I mean, they're paying customers, and if they're not happy with your performance.
He couldn't string 2 passes together. It was terrible.
Dan here says, I think the problem with our wingers and midfielders, they go for glory. What is best for me, not what is best for Man United and how to score goals. Yeah. Basically, what Bruno was saying in his post-match interview. And like you say, Bruce, he's got a cheek. Dan here says, pure profit. And sometimes you need to know when to let your best. It would be pure profit if we sold Rashford because obviously he didn't cost anything. Now, I think it was reported, you know, Matt Law, he covers Chelsea for The Telegraph. He was on like a Chelsea fan podcast yesterday or the day before, and he was talking about Thomas Tuchel. And he says that Thomas Tuchel and Roberto De Zerbi are both on Manchester United's list should they decide to sack Ten Hag. Geez. And that Tuchel wants to manage in the Premier League again. What do you think about that, Rush?
Aye. The same Thomas Tuchel who's just signed Eric Dier, yeah? I'm not a fan of his brand of football. I know, like, he gets results and stuff, but yeah, he's not for me.
Yeah, he's won the Champions League at Chelsea. He's won the Bundesliga.
I'll tell you what, since I last talked, obviously things have changed because I know me and you are fans of up-and-coming managers, including one, Mr. Xabi Alonso. He's been doing great things at Leverkusen this season. But obviously, in light of recent news about Jurgen Klopp stepping down at the end of the season, I think he's probably a shoe in there, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm not even considering that as an option anymore.
Yeah. So then, you know, switch attention to Nagelsmann. His contract with Germany, I think it's only for the summer, so after the Euros. And he's too young to just be stuck in international management. I'm sure that's something that he would want to revisit later down the line. So if an opportunity presented himself, I'm sure he'll jump at the chance to get back into club management.
Yeah, I know that Hanif, who contributes to this show, was not a huge fan of Thomas Tuchel's brand of football.
Mm-hmm.
But he does. It's not as bad as Mourinho or Van Gaal.
I mean, it's up there. That's what he's aspiring to be. Oh, I'll tell you what. Oh, Jose's out of a job now as well. I hope there's no paper talk about him.
No. That's not going to happen. He'd probably go and manage in...
Saudi or Newcastle are the only places I can see Jose going next. Unless he takes an international job.
If I was Newcastle, I was to stay clear.
I'll tell you what. Newcastle is probably Jose's dream, like just to have unlimited funds.
Let's see. Nagelsmann, that's an interesting shout. There's not been a lot of talk about him.
Mm.
being United manager, obviously. Now, there's been a lot of talk about De Zerbi. For me, it'd be a massive risk.
Yeah.
I know he's played some nice football at Brighton and they've got results. They're doing well in Europe. But he hasn't won anything, and not that he's better to at Brighton.
Yeah.
I just think we don't really know what level he's at.
So people like De Zerbi and Graham Potter, I think, are project managers. They're ones that you get in and you have to give them a lot of time and you have to work with them. And at a club like ours, I'm not sure if you'll be afforded that. And you kind of need experience to go with it. And then when you look at that market now, all the best managers are very settled and very old. So that leaves us in a precarious position where there's only a few to look at, really. Zinedine Zidane, is somebody that would fit the mold, but he doesn't want any job that isn't France or Real Madrid. You know, when you look at Nagelsmann, he's young, he's upcoming still because of his age and that, and he's won. So it's a nice little compromise. Ruben Amaranth is another one I'm looking at. Amaranth from Sporting Lisbon. But again, like you say, you know, people are going to ask questions about his level.
Another gamble.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's going to be a number of top clubs looking for a manager in the summer.
So that's the thing. So I mean, that's why these lot they've got to really decide what they want to do in the next couple of months. Do they try to get the fixture right and ride out for another season with Ten Hag, or do they go in a new direction? Because Liverpool are going to be in the market. Newcastle are probably going to be in the market as well.
Barcelona
are going to be in the market. Yeah, Xavi's leaving. Potentially even Chelsea, because that's just how they roll.
Yeah, that's how they operate. And I tell you what, I don't want Pochettino.
No.
That ship has sailed.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you remember in 2022, the choice for United was between Poch and Ten Hag? Now, we could say Ten Hag was not the right choice, but Poch was certainly not the right choice. So
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to say in hindsight. At the time, I definitely thought we made the right decision in going for Ten Hag over Poch.
If it's between them two, yeah, it's the right decision. Yeah, yeah. But perhaps we should have looked at somebody else other than Ten Hag. But the thing is, there's just not enough top managers to go around.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Another one that fits the mold in terms of accolades and stuff. Hansi Flick might be a hot commodity in the summer.
I'd be slightly concerned by how poor he was as Germany manager.
Yeah, yeah.
But then
he won the treble with Bayern. Made minimal changes as well, personnel wise, when he went and took them over, and they were in a shambles when he went.
See, for me, you have to. I like to judge a manager on his most recent job, because sometimes managers can be good in the past, and then they become outdated. Now, yes, he won the treble at Bayern, but he was also sacked by Bayern the following season when results weren't going well. And
the nature of the beast, isn't it? I think all the top managers have been sacked.
And he was sacked as Germany manager as well. So again, that comes with an element of risk.
What makes it Nagelsmann appealing? Like, it wasn't really for footballing reasons why he left Bayern. So, you know.
What were the reasons again?
So with that one, there was some unrest. There were splits in the dressing room. There was unrest in the dressing room. There were stories getting leaked. I think he blamed one of the players for the leak, but it turned out it was actually his missus that was a leak. So then they just found his position to be untenable.
So if we were replacing Ten Hag in the summer, he would be your man then?
Yeah, I guess so. Probably the best out of what's currently available. But I mean, so many things change, you know. But yeah, at the moment, he would be right up there.
Yeah. I know Zidane doesn't speak English and he hasn't shown any appetite to manage in England.
Anyone. He hasn't shown any appetite to manage anyone outside of Real Madrid and France.
Well, the France one hasn't even happened yet. He's obviously waiting on Didier Deschamps.
The only other club I could potentially see him is maybe Juventus because of his connection to that club.
But let me point something out to you, which I have heard. is that Jean-Claude Blanc and Zidane are mates. So could he potentially persuade Zinedine to be Manchester United manager?
I doubt it. We might see him in the stands, though, for a game or two.
I think he would only take a job if he's got a quality team to work with.
Yeah, definitely.
He wouldn't put his reputation on the line to come manage Anthony and
Onana
and Harry Maguire. You know, it ain't going to happen.
And the other thing is as well, like, people forget that he left Madrid and then went back to Madrid, and it wasn't all roses the second time round.
Yeah, but he has a fair few Champions Leagues on his record, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. Three Champions Leagues. He's up there with the best of them.
Yeah, but nobody really knows how he would get on outside of that environment. You know, he's a Galactico managing Galacticos at Real Madrid. It was all set up for him. He was their B team coach as well, wasn't he? Knew a lot of the players before he even took the job. So you take him outside of that environment, how well would he do? Nobody really knows at the moment. I think if he'd have been United manager instead of Ten Hag, I think he would have struggled, you know, under this current structure. But the reason to be optimistic, we have appointed a new CEO, although I don't think he can start till the summer. And I want to point to you a quote from the new CEO who did an interview with the Financial Times today. And this is music to my ears. He says, this is Omar Barada, "You need a very solid rationale as to why you're offering the fee, the salary, and the commission. Once you start overpaying, you lose that argument, and that puts you in a much more difficult position for the next signing."
Hallelujah.
And that led me to say that he is the Andy Woodward. I mean,
you know what? Because we've been so devout of any common sense for so long, the fact that this man is just, he's not done anything, you know, outside of the box. He's literally just broken it down simply on how a club should be operating. And we're all just rejoicing and celebrating.
He may be the best signing we make under Ineos.
Absolutely. Obviously, time will tell. But yeah, there's a lot of things about the deal I like. The fact that it got done very quickly and without the media frenzy is great. I hope that's a sign of things to come. I don't think anybody saw this coming. There was no reports. All these ITKs and people didn't report on this. It just got done. And I like that. And apparently, this was the guy that City had in mind to take over from Tiksiki as well. So, you know. They thought of this guy very highly over there.
Yeah, and it's also interesting that he had been offered the CEO position at other Premier League clubs, MLS clubs, and even NFL franchises. He turned them down, but he accepted the role at Manchester United.
Yeah.
He's very ambitious, and he wanted to be a CEO. And, you know, is it Ferrara? Is their CEO. He's been there since 2012. No sign of him stepping down. So he's decided to go to United to fulfill that role. And I loved the spagginess from Guardiola when he was asked about it in his press conference. And the meltdown from City fans on social media. So clearly this guy must have been doing something right. I understand from reliable journalists that he played a role in bringing Erling Haaland to the club and has been responsible for the success of their academy. So, yeah, and looking at the things that he said now and things that he said in interviews in the past, he does seem to have his head screwed on, doesn't he?
Yeah. It's a good stepping stone in terms of correcting the structure or lack thereof.
Yeah. The Man City CEO is Fernan Serrano. That's the name I was looking for. And the man you're talking about,
Tiki. Yeah. They got him from Barcelona as well. Yeah.
He is the director of football. He's the director of football.
Okay.
Omar Barada was the chief footballing operations officer for City Group. So not just at Manchester City.
So he oversaw all of it. So that would be all of their affiliated clubs.
Yeah, and I believe he played a role in the success of Girona as well.
Yeah, and New York City and all of that. So, yeah.
Girona For anyone who doesn't know, Girona are top of La Liga.
Yep.
Which is remarkable, really. Such a small club, ahead of Barcelona and Real Madrid.
It's quite refreshing to see.
Yeah, but it was ruined for me whenever I found out they were owned by City Group. I was like, who this unknown quantity, top of La Liga, and then you have a look at who they're owned by, and you're like, nah, it's not that impressive actually. You know, obviously City Group have done their due diligence and they've appointed amazing scouts and a coach, and they've done a great job there, you know, bringing in unknown quantities and gelling them into a team that's capable of outpacing Madrid and Barcelona, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's even led to Xavi Hernandez resigning as Barcelona manager.
Mm.
Which was, by the way, that was quite noble of him, because he said in his press conference that he was doing it for the good of the club.
Yeah,
he no longer felt that he was the right man for the job. Very, very rare you see that now, isn't it?
Yeah. It's commendable. I just wish that he'd hold on for another year, in the hope that when he stepped down, they would have reached out to Pep again.
Yeah.
Now that Klopp's gone, you know, it's very much one down, one to go.
Yeah, it's quite possible that Guardiola could go next season. At the end of next season now?
Hopefully, if he doesn't sign an extension.
And you know, with Klopp and Guardiola, both of them potentially leaving within the next 18 months, and with us getting new ownership and a total restructure of the club, if we get this right, there's a real chance for us to win the Premier League.
Oh, most definitely. But this is, you know, it's a long way to go till then. But yeah. If they do decide to go in a different direction, then the next appointment is crucial. So they got to start doing their due diligence properly.
Yeah, Tixie Bernstein, that's the director of football at Man City.
Yeah.
And I think Omar Barrado was hopeful to get one of those roles, mm-hmm. director of football or CEO, but it didn't look like it was going to happen. So he's decided to come to Manchester United instead. We're still waiting on the appointment of our own director of football. I think they're trying to get Dan Ashworth and Paul Mitchell as a director of football and head of recruitment. Imagine if he had both of those. Like an
absolute dream team on paper.
Yeah. As long as they're willing to work together and they don't clash.
Yeah,
heads.
yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? Yeah, you got to put egos to a side.
Yeah, that would be a hell of a transfer, Kitty, to use a football term. Is that what Liverpool used to have, the transfer Kitty? no, not Kitty, what am I talking about? The transfer committee, that's the phrase I'm looking for, transfer committee. They had that under Brendan Rodgers, I think. What I am hoping for at Liverpool is that Steven Gerrard takes over from Jurgen Klopp.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be absolutely amazing. But I don't think they'll do that, though, unfortunately, for us. I think they probably, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do. But yeah, I can't think past Xabi Alonso at the moment.
Yeah, I was talking about Alonso in the last month or so, potentially being a head manager. But now I've given up now on that.
Yeah, he's a shoo-in, especially if he goes on to win the title this season with the Leverkusen as well.
Might not, you know, because they drew 0-0 and Bayern are now 2 points behind them.
With a game in hand. Have they got a game in hand, have they?
No, I think they played a game in hand.
Oh, they played it, okay.
And they won.
Right. It was always a tough ask, wasn't it? But, I mean, undefeated, though.
But
incredible
having
stuff.
Said that, I think Leverkusen have lost a couple of players to AFCON, including Victor Boniface. I may not be pronouncing that correctly, but he's their number nine, and he's playing at AFCON. So
yeah,
if they get him back, it might help them. But they've stumbled there at the weekend. You know, it just seems to be you build up a bit of a lead in the Bundesliga, but one slip up and Bayern are right on your coattails.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And also, I mean, you've got to remember there's only 18 teams in that league, right? So 34 games and not 38.
Yeah. And Dortmund are miles off the pace. Be lucky to qualify for the Champions League. But
Stuttgart were doing well at one stage, but I think they've started to tail off, but they're still doing well for them.
They're third, but they're 10 points off second, I think.
Yeah.
I want to see Sancho do well at Dortmund, so they'll buy him in the summer. But so far, he's got an assist and won a penalty. Nothing too spectacular from him.
They were making a meal out of it on the timeline. That's all. Apparently, he won the penalty and wanted to take it himself, and there was a bit of a ruckus.
That's right. Yeah. Seen that. That's we've seen that a few times at different clubs.
I mean, these things happen. That's just one of those. I think it's up to the manager to select the penalty takers and to have this set up before games start, to be fair.
Yeah, and how many times have we seen it that the non-penalty taker insists on taking it because he won the penalty, he takes it and misses. That's happened at United. I remember Nani doing that against Fulham in 2010 or so.
Fergie didn't speak to him, did he? On the way home that day.
Yeah, I think it was Nani had to give Fergie a lift home that day.
And he didn't speak to him.
It's a bit awkward. I can't see John Murta lasting too long. I tell you after the whole, especially after the whole Jude Bellingham fiasco, and Fergie apparently doesn't like John Murta, and Fergie is friends with Jim Radcliffe, so Fergie will be in Jim's ear saying, "Get rid of that bloke, I don't like him." On a serious note, John Murta has not performed well as United's football director.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't think there was much he could have done to stay in the job. I always felt Ineos would bring in their own people if they got their way.
But there has been slight speculation that he may be kept in another role at the club. But that would probably be a demotion, and he might not be happy with that. You know, he was once offered the director of football role at Inter Miami, so maybe that might be an opportunity for him again if David Beckham comes calling. And I certainly will drive him to the airport because he was responsible for the Casemiro deal. Not that Casemiro was a bad player, but 70 million for a 30-year-old was very bad business.
It's not a decision that makes sense in footballing terms.
And Jim Radcliffe, I think he's been on the record to be very critical of that signing. That's one of the reasons why you'll see Casemiro shipped out in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you're an oil-rich club with endless pockets, then fantastic. But, you know, if you have to work within constraints, then, you know, that's not the kind of deal that you do.
There's constraints on everybody now with the FFP.
I'll tell you what. I mean, it's finally starting to take effect, isn't it? I don't think the big clubs, especially the rich ones, really cared about getting fined, but now that there's the prospect of point deductions, I think everyone's alert and taking it a lot more serious.
Yeah, with Everton already got a point deduction, they've been charged again. Forest have been charged, which is why the January window has been a complete non-event. I think clubs are afraid now to spend any money, and this might be the future of the January transfer window. Absolutely nothing has happened in this window. It's now become a bit of a loan market, really, hasn't it?
It has. I mean, like with every sort of market, you know, there's highs and lows. And I think, it's about time it settled back down, actually, because at one point it was getting absolutely ridiculous. And when we look at the spending power as well of the Premier League in comparison to other leagues around Europe, it's night and day.
Not even Chelsea are spending in January. That,
I mean, mind you, they've spent enough for like, what, 5-6 years?
They spent a decade's worth of money in one window.
In one window, it's madness. Madness. The most expensive double pivot ever assembled in history. It's madness.
And they haven't done that well, have they?
And they haven't done that well. Yeah. And we haven't even really seen Romeo Lavia. Cool.
No, although they did beat Middlesbrough 6-1, was it in the
second leg semi-final. First leg they lost.
Yeah, we all wanted to see Michael Carrick get through to the final, although maybe not, because we want the best possible chance of Liverpool losing, and that's probably Chelsea. Although I still think Liverpool will win that final.
Listen, I think Jürgen's played an absolute blinder. With the timing of his announcement as well. You know what? You have to give credit sometimes where it's due. It takes someone smart to realize when the time is right to go. He hasn't fallen into the trap of Arsene Wenger, where he stuck around perhaps a bit longer than he should have done. And also, making this announcement now, it's better than any asthma pump that he can give any of his players from now till the end of the season. They're all going to be up for it. So, you know, so he's going to have everyone on his side, including all the players. So this is going to give him a real boost. And to make that announcement when they're top of the league as well. Also, this gives Liverpool ample time to find the replacement. So, yeah, he's played a blinder. Can't take anything away from him.
Yeah, I do think you're right. I do think it will give the Liverpool squad extra motivation to to win the league in Klopp's final season. But I do have to mention that when Fergie announced he was going to retire in 2002, it had a detrimental effect on Manchester United.
It did. Because with how long Fergie was there for as well, like, you know. They weren't really sure where it was going because the club at the time as well was entering a bit of that transition. Because even when he stayed, we saw this rise at Chelsea. We were going into the sort of Cleberson Jemba Jemba era.
Yeah, just as well that he stayed because we won a lot more leagues and we won another Champions League. And yeah, so I'm glad that he stayed on for another 11 years after that. Yeah,
definitely.
Because we've seen how hard it's been to replace him. Definitely. It's been excruciating.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's been made harder than it should have been because of our incompetence. But yeah, you're right. But that, you know, that's once. I wouldn't even say once a generation. Several generations. Yeah. Like, you're not going to see that, you know.
18 of United's 20 league titles were won by just two managers. And other than Fergie and Busby, no United manager has won the top division since World War One.
Wow.
that is how difficult it is to succeed at Manchester United.
Yeah.
So it's an incredible stat. Who is going to be the next Busby or Fergie? That is the question. Which none of us know. I certainly don't think it's going to be Ten Hag, if I'm being brutally honest about it. And I've been saying that for months now.
There was another man that's doing quite well, but I didn't mention him because I know you've got PTSD from the Dutch league. The Feyenoord manager's doing quite well.
let's not go there. Yeah, maybe he could be our reserve manager, but I don't think we should be recruiting first team managers from the Dutch league. Not even Van Nistelrooy. No, sorry. No.
Yeah, because the Feyenoord one, like his name's been talked about a little bit now.
He's been linked to other jobs, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been seen as one of these up and comers. No, but yeah, it was literally just the Dutch tax. I thought, I should leave him out.
I think I've said after Van Gaal and Ten Hag, I don't want to see any more Dutch managers at Manchester United. It just doesn't work. In fact, I was looking at the record of Dutch managers in the Premier League as a whole. It's not good.
It's probably not great.
I think the best one was probably Gus Hiddink, and he was only at Chelsea for short spells.
Yeah. I mean, we've not seen the best Dutch managers, have we? I mean, the most successful that I've seen, anyway, is probably Frank Rijkaard.
We've obviously had Ruud Gullit.
Yeah, Dick Advocaat.
Martin Jol. Ronald Koeman. None of these have worked out.
None of them have worked out. Yeah, you're right. I think, Gus Hiddink's probably the best of the lot. Honourable mention, I'd say, to Martin Jol. I don't think he had that bad of a spell at Spurs.
Yeah, so. The Spurs managers that are revered or Redknapp and Pochettino, and now Ange to a certain extent. We'll see how it pans out long term. But the Spurs managers that actually won trophies in the Premier League era were George Graham and Juan de Ramos, who weren't that popular with the fans.
No, they weren't. Obviously, George Graham with his Arsenal history, and Juan de Ramos. Yeah, Juan de Ramos randomly. I mean, he got them silverware, got sacked, and then went to Real Madrid. It was all very shocking.
Yeah, Real Madrid have some random managers as well, haven't they?
Yeah.
But perhaps the most random piece of business from Real Madrid was the signing of Thomas Gravesen from Everton. I just couldn't believe that at the time.
that was mental.
And just the Real Madrid fans apparently loved him because they'd never seen this before. This combative midfielder just flying in the challenges left, right and centre.
It was a bit of a random one, that. I remember, I remember as a kid being shocked when Robbie Keane went to Inter Milan. That was a surprising one. I'll tell you what, credit to Robbie Keane. Robbie was he was a proper talent, him. But at that time, to go to Inter Milan must have been really daunting. I used to think, could you imagine like Robbie walking into that dressing room and seeing R9 and Christian Vieri and Recoba and Zamorano and Roberto Baggio? Probably thinking, I'm going to struggle to get into the reserves here.
Gravesen was a random signing from Madrid, but one day Ramos, Carlos Queiroz was even hired as their manager at one point.
He went there the season we sold Beckham. I thought it was quite funny because Bex turned up and he knew the manager better than all the other players. He was a great number two, Queiroz, but he could never cut it as the main man.
This is where Roy Keane didn't go to Real Madrid when Carlos Queiroz rocked up, because them two were the best of enemies. Keane told that story in training. It was the season where he ended up leaving the club in that summer, in pre-season. Queiroz was picking two teams for a training match, and Roy Keane wasn't selected in either of the 11s. And he said, "What about me?" And this is a club captain, mind you. And Queiroz just threw him a bib and said, "Stand up front." And he was absolutely livid. And he said this in his autobiography, he was not a fan of Carlos Queiroz one bit. And they didn't get on very well. Did Beckham get on with Carlos Queiroz? I'm not sure. But one person who Beckham did not get on with was Glenn Hoddle, as he alluded to in his recent documentary. I thought that was something I didn't know about that. So it was quite interesting.
Andy Cole didn't get on with him either. He was quite divisive, Glenn Hoddle.
Absolutely, Beckham and his family felt that Hoddle threw him under the bus after the red card against Argentina. It does appear to be the case when you look at his interviews from that time, Glenn Hoddle. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, we often talk about managers protecting their players in public. Well, Hoddle certainly didn't do that in 1998.
Because I remember they used to question him as well about Andy Cole and his lack of England appearances and that. And he said some nonsense about Andy needing too many chances to score goals. And this was a player who not only was he doing it in the Premier League, but he was scoring and playing regularly in Europe.
Andy Cole has 187 Premier League goals. I mean,
no penalties.
No penalties, So complete nonsense from Glenn Hoddle.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I can understand at the time, we had a wealth of experience up front. We had a lot of strikers. You had prime Alan Shearer, you had the up and coming Michael Owen and Robbie Fowler. But still, I just thought Andy always got overlooked. But to come out with stuff like that, he needs too many chances to score. Ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, he only had 15 England caps. It was quite remarkable, really, for a player of that quality. We often use the word underrated, but he really was.
He doesn't get talked about enough, especially when I'm speaking to younger people now, Carl, where we try to put together top 10 strikers of the Premier League era. He's always one that I find that they overlook or don't know about. He's always a shoo-in for me.
Absolutely. And his partnership with Dwight York will never be forgotten.
In the Premier League era as well, top five easily of our best strikers.
And that's what I really liked about United under Fergie, is that in both cases with Cole and York, they went to decent Premier League teams and took their best striker. I want to see United do that again. We don't have to go after the Mbappes or the Haaland of this world.
To be honest, that was what Fergie did for the most part. He bought the best domestically who were proven in the league who did their thing and, you know, could elevate them to another level. But yeah, we went and got out the best in the league. Like Andy Cole, he was top goal scorer at Newcastle. We went and got him. Henningberg was like a record signing at the time. Gary Pallister was a record signing. Roy Keane, we broke the bank for him.
Yeah, Dwight York at Aston
Villa. Dwight York, yeah, yeah. 12.6 million or something, I think it was. Back when Shearer was the record at 15. So, yeah, it's hefty sum.
Cantona, Leeds.
Cantona, yeah.
So many great examples. And this is why I suppose what makes it difficult nowadays is that, like, if we went to buy an Ollie Watkins or an Ivan Toney, you're talking £80 million at least.
Yeah, well, so this is the thing with the TV rights and the money and everything that's come in. The bigger clubs can no longer go and pluck talent from mid-table to lower table sides. They no longer have to sell like they once did to make ends meet, so they can charge and hold out for the ridiculous fees, you know?
Yeah, they don't need the money anymore.
Yeah, they don't need it anymore. And then obviously, like back in the day, it used to be that the more established players cost you more, and if you were to gamble on a youngster with potential, they would be cheaper in comparison. Now it's almost as if they add on what this player could become to the fee, you know? So you're paying for potential, potential which they might not reach, which never used to be the case before, I don't think.
Yeah, we massively overpaid for Rasmus Højlund.
Huge. Like, if we're being honest, his base value is probably about 25 to 30 million.
Yeah, but clubs know we're desperate, and that's been the issue under the Woodward Glazer era. Especially when you have Woodward bragging about how much money we've got to spend. How naive is that? So Omar Barada looks like he's going to try to do the opposite. And
I hope so. I hope he finds a nice balance.
Yeah. What we should be doing, if we go after a player, clubs try to charge us too much, just move on to another target then and say, well,
absolutely, you need to have plan A to C and D, you know, you need to have alternatives lined up. And also when it comes to doing the due diligence, not just the talent of the player, but you need to do a bit of a background check as well, seeing what kind of person you're going to be investing in.
Yeah, and I don't think that's even been done under Ten Hag. Some of the signings have been questionable.
Some of it, the warning signs have been there, to be honest, because I'll tell you what I said at the time, like when we signed Anthony, I wasn't happy with how he orchestrated the move. It was very reminiscent of the thing between Cristiano and Real Madrid at the time, and I wasn't happy about that then. And I kept the same energy for this one. I didn't like it. I did not like it. And then you got other people saying, oh, why don't they just accept the money? They're never going to get this kind of money again. We made a great offer. Well, at the end of the day, he's their player. You got to respect it, you know?
And we should never have went that high for him.
Well, yeah, that was ridiculous in itself. We paid double what he's worth.
Yeah, and I had to question Onana as well for two reasons. He was dropped by Cameroon during AFCON, and he threatened to leave the camp again. Now, we know he's had several issues with Cameroon. In fact, he was signed by United with the understanding that he'd retired from international football, and he went back on that.
Yes, it was it's been an absolute shambles, the whole Cameroon thing.
Yeah, and he was rightfully dropped after his performance against Senegal.
Yeah.
So for him to threaten to leave the camp and go back to Manchester, it shows me he's got a very poor attitude. And let's also remember that he was banned for taking performance-enhancing drugs at Ajax as well.
He was, yeah, he was banned. And then he left on a free to go to Inter.
And let's remember that Ten Hag also wanted to sign Marko Arnautović, who has a bit of a questionable history off the pitch, which was led to protests from the fans online, and then the club pulled the plug on it. So Ten Hag doesn't seem to do his due diligence on the background of these players.
Yep.
In fact, I'd see the allegations that have been made against Anthony by former girlfriends. This had been known. This was known when he was at Ajax. So why was why did Tenag take him to Manchester? So,
and even things like, you know, going on strike and just throwing tantrums and stuff if you don't get your way, this is all telling behavior for me.
And I think Anthony is also a loose cannon on the pitch at times. Very, very lucky not to be red carded in several games.
Very much so. Very much so.
Yeah, we really don't. There's reasons to be optimistic with Ineos coming in. Everything they're saying and doing seems positive. It's what we've been crying out for years.
Mm-hmm.
But they've a lot of work to do, a lot of work to do, and it's going to take time.
Absolutely. But we need one hell of a summer window to give me any kind of hope that we're headed in the right direction.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I think with January, like a lot of the time at United, we would most transfer windows would be maybe 3 or 4 in, 3 out, and then loan a couple of players out too.
Yeah,
and then a lot of players like Martial would stick around and outstay their welcome.
Mm.
But I genuinely believe this time it could be 8 out and 8 in. I can generally see see that happening. Mm.
Oh, he's definitely out this season in the summer. There's no way he gets a new deal.
Yeah, zero chance. And it'll be a massive saving on the wage bill.
Oh, huge. 250 off the wage. 250.
Yeah, and there's an opportunity here to make money with if we could sell Greenwood and sell Sancho and you know, a few others. You know, we can really help, you know, meet the FFP regulations. I think if we're going to spend big, we're going to have to sell well, I feel.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the over 30s as well. I think Cass is a shoe-in to go. Rafa, they've put themselves in a stupid position where a lot of us were under the impression that he had one more year left on his contract, but it turns out it's an option. So if he leaves on a free, you know, on the books, it looks terrible because, you know, net spend-wise and that, you're not getting anything back. But then they've got a decision to make on if they offer that extension. He's on 350, I think. So
yep. Hopefully we can get fees for Varane and Casemiro from Saudi clubs as well.
Yeah. I think Saudi's probably the best way to get rid of Varane.
And maybe Wan-Bissaka could go to Saudi too for a fee. Or even Palace.
Palace won't have the money.
No.
You're taking a big loss if you're sending him back to Palace. Unless it's some kind of deal that involves Elise coming to us.
Could well happen. Michael Elise is a Manchester United fan. And if his choice was between Chelsea and Man United, he'd go to Man United. That's what we've been reading. And there's obviously a chance to sell McTominay again, I feel, for a decent fee. So if United could actually sell,
I mean,
well,
if we could listen, if we could get that 30 million offer again, then I think we absolutely need to cash in on
take it.
There's
an opportunity here to actually recoup a lot of decent money and use it on buying players, which we never do, but now that different people are running the operation, it might happen this time, so let's hope so. So Wolves, I'm very concerned. I think we could lose this game.
And there's two games in quick succession now, isn't there, Kyle? Because we've got midweek fixtures and then the weekend games as well. So, having no football for a month, we've got two prem games in the space of a week.
Thursday, Sunday, yeah.
Yeah.
That's West Ham at home on Sunday. But one step at a time. Now, anytime we play a decent team away from home, we lose. So I don't want to predict a loss, but I think it's going to be a difficult night for United. But, and, you know, Ten Hag doesn't want to be losing games just as Ineos are about to, you know, have their partial takeover ratified.
Definitely.
You know once they're actually, you know, Ineos still haven't got the permission, you know, from the, you know, there's the regulatory, you know, background checks and all that. Once that's completed, then they're officially owners of the football club. Ten Hag cannot afford to be losing games whenever that happens. An embarrassing defeat to Wolves and then losing at home to West Ham would be awful, awful timing, considering they're going to be taken over at the beginning or the beginning of February or mid-February at the latest. So,
yep.
But I don't, there's, like you said, there doesn't seem to be the opportunity to change manager mid-season because of the lack of availability of top quality managers. But
yeah,
considering how competitive it's going to be for managers this summer, clubs like Liverpool, United and Barcelona and so on will want to get that manager in as early as possible. You know, get that deal signed maybe in April, ready to start in June. So I think if we're going to bring in a new manager, I think we're going to have to get this done quickly. Now, you think about whenever Bayern Munich bring in a new coach, they have it done, you know, well before the end of the season.
Yeah.
That's what we need to do.
Definitely, definitely. But I think, to respect the current manager, I think if they were to make that kind of announcement, it would probably be, in the final week of the season.
Yeah. Well, they're obviously not going to announce that while he's still there, I don't think, but
they
could get it all done behind the scenes. No, like
they could announce it in May, like in late May.
Yeah, do you remember they'd obviously done the deal with Mourinho in principle, and
poor Louis was lifting up the FA Cup when the news came out.
Do you reckon that Jorge Mendes leaked it to the media on the day of the FA Cup final because he doesn't like Ten Hag or didn't like Van Gaal? Sorry,
Van Gaal.
Do you know why? Because of what happened with Falcao. If you remember, he was very critical of Falcao after his loan spell at United, and he sent him back to Monaco, which frustrated Jorge Mendes, and he wasn't a fan of Louis after that, so he took his revenge out on him by.
I don't know why, though, because he went to Chelsea the season after and he was terrible there too.
Yeah, but you know what agents are like with their clients.
He was
going into the press room with the trophy and with a big smile on his face, and the first thing the journalist said to him was that you've been sacked, and Mourinho's taken over. So
yeah, madness, utterly classless. That I thought it was I just don't think they handled it well at all. But
the signs are good. From an Ineos point of view, you know, the fact that they got that Omar Berada deal done without any journalists having a clue about
under wraps, that was the main thing for me. The fact that there was no big hype around it, no media frenzy, just got it done nice and quiet.
But of course, David Ornstein always gets hold of it sooner or later. And as soon as he went public, then the club were forced to make a statement within an hour or so. I think Man City actually announced it before United. Because once Ornstein says something, then everybody knows it's true. So it kind of forces clubs to then make an official announcement then. So we've talked for an hour and a half. We still wrap it up there, Bruce.
Yes.
Everyone, please smash a like on the video, subscribe to the podcast and get more of your comments in. And I will get back to as many of those as possible. And I shall see you again next time, Bruce.
Yeah, definitely. Take care.
All right. See you later.